In 1985, Shannon Flynn was being arrested for being friends with Mark Hoffman. We'll listen to his conversation about his experiences in jail and the false accusations police made against him. He has some pretty strong words for police. Check out our conversation. But before we do that, I just wanted to mention that Kurt Bench of Benchmark Books actually is also selling copies of our books. So if you can help me, you can help Kurt, it would be great. So check out Benchmark Books. They've got lots of our latest issues of our transcripts. So please check that out. Now back to our conversation. You know, I understand from the book that I read, you actually spent some time in jail.
Can you talk about that?
So what was that all about?
Well, I was incredibly naive. Maybe still am. But I was incredibly naive and unknowing. And so when those bombs went off, and especially the one with Mark, man, I knew him really well, a lot better than almost anybody else did. So I thought I could be helpful. And so I volunteered once or twice to go to the police station and tell what I knew and contribute some information. Well, what I didn't realize is the police were casting a very wide net on potential suspects, and I got caught up in that net. And so at one point, the police in an interview had told me they were going to go search my house, and so I said, well, you're going to find something there that's illegal. I said, there's an automatic weapon that's an illegal one that actually belongs to Mark, but it's in a storage unit of mine. And so I was at one point arrested for possession of an unregistered automatic firearm, which appears in that's a federal crime under the tax code, strangely enough. And so then I spent 3 days in Salt Lake County jail and then was able to get bail and get out and then never went back. So in that process, I acquired a defense attorney. And I now, at the time I didn't realize this, but he suggested strongly that I do a polygraph. Well, now I know it's because he wanted to know if I was telling the truth. But it could have been helpful to have me excluded. It didn't exclude me for 1 second because the police were just, I mean, this was a huge deal and a huge crime. And they were not coming up with, you know, just lead pipe cinch suspects very quickly. And so they were just gonna do what they had to find somebody. And so that became a charge that I could be charged with, though I was never charged with anything to do with the rest of it. But he suggested I do this polygraph, and he knew about David Raskin, so he said, why don't we do this, and then I will help exclude you. So I said, sure. So we drove up to the University of Utah, and I sat there, and like I said, was all rigged up and had 6 different sensors going and all of that, and $600.
You had to pay?
I paid.
Oh, wow.
I paid. And, I think in my attorney's view, then he believed that I hadn't had anything to do with it. But like to say, the police didn't.
They didn't care.
They didn't care.
So the police still thought you had something to do with it?
Somebody. And they didn't care who it was.
They wanted to hang somebody.
Oh, they had to. And so Lynn Jacobs was looked at carefully. I believe Brent Metcalf was looked at somewhat. I mean, like I say, they were casting that net as wide as they could get it. And it was still, because it all drove from the incredibility of the whole thing. No one believed that any one person could do all of those forgeries and build those bombs and kill those people and all of that stuff. They just didn't believe it. Even if Mark did it, they didn't believe that one person could do it. There must be somebody else involved. And so, of course, they went through the normal police procedures. They found, you know, Confederates, friends, whoever, and they applied whatever pressure they could, because that's a normal investigative technique. Because, you know, often evidence of a crime is not really readily available. A lot of times people are convicted on either witness or complicit testimony. So they were looking for somebody to say, oh yeah, he did it, and I was there, and you know.
Okay, so they put a lot of pressure on you. I mean, did they accuse you of being a co-conspirator or something?
They did a number of things that to this day I will never forgive them for. Never. And this plays into a little bit why, for me, this was difficult to imagine. You will be able to show on this some examples of his handwriting, his natural handwriting from his mission and then from when he was in prison. And when you see those examples of handwriting, and you can imagine that you didn't know that all this had happened, and someone showed those to you, and you say, that is the handwriting of a master forger, you'd say, no, it's not. No, it's not. Because it's awful. The spelling is awful. The handwriting is, it's like a child. And that continues to this day. That is not affected. Well, surprise to all of us, that hand did produce, as he admitted, over 86 different signatures. And then long sheets, not just signatures, two-sided sheets of paper, full letters. But anyway, one of the things that they did is when I went down to be interviewed, I was just trying to be nice. I ended up going out in handcuffs. My parents came down to the police station to pick up my car, and one of the detectives met them and said, oh, he murdered two people.
You murdered two people?
That's right.
Really? I bet that went over well with your parents.
Well, and I'm sure that, the guy that did that to this day doesn't care. Well, that's what I believed. I will not forgive that. And then they did something else too. They did a search of my house while I was in jail. We had a storage unit across the street. We had some baby furniture and a few odds and ends in there. They went in there and they believed they had found the bomb factory. And so an agent from the BATF, unfortunately, I don't know his name right now, but I'll come up with it and I will speak his name out now loud because that man should be made to be responsible for what he did. They had called the news media. All three Salt Lake channels were out there, Associated Press, Deseret News, everybody. They went in there, had a big pair of bolt cutters, cut that lock, swung open that door, looked, came out. There was nothing there. And that man stood and looked in the camera and said, the bomb factory was there, but it has been moved.
Oh, really?
Straight out lie. So when they said to me, oh, Mark made those bombs, I said, no, you're lying. Because I've seen you do it before. You've done it to me. I got to watch that while I was sitting in jail up on the felony floor. It was very exciting. All of my fellow cellmates were. I was the most famous person in jail that weekend.
Oh boy. So wait a minute. Let me make sure I understand what you're saying there. So you knew that they were lying about you, and so when they said that Mark was the bomber, you felt that they were lying about Mark as well.
I didn't know anything that that would be true, and I knew they were fully capable of just out and out lying. And like I say, this wasn't, oh, we couldn't quite tell, or there's a little fuzziness that's kind of a judgment call. No, straight out lie. And not a lie that was damaging, that said that I did something that was horrible, that was completely not true.
Wow, that would have been a very difficult to deal with, I'm sure.
Well, at any rate, so that changed the main view. But as a result, and then of course his wife, his parents, everybody, he didn't do that because he never presented that sort of a persona to anybody in any way. He was not criminally inclined, You would believe something that somebody had committed an armed robbery if they had committed, three or four burglaries before. Because that's, that, and that's kind of in the same thing. And so you could believe that. Never, never an arrest, never a traffic ticket, anything. And so they would say, legitimately, from my experience, that that can't be true. We're all fooled. It was true.
So you believed he was innocent for a very long time.
For a very long, relatively long time.
Right. So, I mean, how did you come to change your mind?
Well, the evidence did build after a period of time, but what really turned the key for me was when he pled guilty. Because I knew that, I mean, and I had an interview with a reporter, because right after that happened, they called and said, what do you think about that? And I said, well, obviously he did it, because no one would say that unless they did. Mm-hmm. Now, it took a long time afterwards to really gain the full belief of that, because then you had to see how he was able to do the forgeries, and, you know, a lot of information had to come for it to then be believable. But as I've been speaking so far, there's all sorts of things that now we can understand that's true, because you can see how it happened.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Shannon Flynn. Mark Hoffman doesn't have very many visitors, but Shannon Flynn tells us about some of the visits that he made, as well as a very surprising visitor.
But I did find out that Gary Sheets went one time. And, I mean, you'll be able to show that, you know, that the correspondence for that. But I have no idea what was said. No idea. And I can't imagine what that would have been like. Though, actually, for Mark, I don't believe that would have been the worst encounter he had of that nature.
Click here to subscribe. Click here for a transcript. And over here, you'll see some other videos that we've done here on YouTube. We hope you'll use this as a valuable resource to learn more about Mormon history.